Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Budget deliberations between Governor Tony Evers and GOP leaders break down while the Joint Finance Committee is back to work. Plus, the Trump administration is threatening to withhold future election funding from Wisconsin, though it's unclear what effect that could have. And Milwaukee Public Schools see another funding suspension due to late reporting. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for June 6th.
Hi, I'm J.R. Ross.
And I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
Welcome to Rewind this week. Anya, thanks for filling in.
My pleasure.
There was no deal. That's the big news, I think, the Capitol this week. So budget talks break down. We're going to start talking about the announcement late Wednesday from GOP leaders, followed closely by Governor Evers, of we can't reach the agreement. I guess first we'll talk about what they said. This is from Devin Lemahue, Senate Majority Leader, and Howard Markline, the co-chair of the Finance Committee. We have reached the point where Governor Evers' spending priorities have extended beyond what taxpayers can afford. Some of these people, Robin Voss and co-chair of the Finance Committee, Mark Bourne. Some Republicans remain open discussions with Governor Evers in hopes of finding areas of agreement. However, after meeting till late last night, and again this morning, appears two sides are remaining far apart. And then the governor's kicker, the concept of compromise is simple. Everyone gets something they want, and no one gets everything they want. So, Anya, I mean, the backstory here is they first met March 26th. There were meetings, I think, 2 weeks ago. Again, last week, the governor's staff said that there were meetings every day this week before these things broke off. Were you surprised they didn't reach a deal on a budget?
You know, I have optimism and pessimism as a Capitol reporter, and so I think the fact that they were having these meetings was really interesting, and we were all kind of paying attention. But the issues that they were talking about, especially around a tax deal, are issues that there is just not a whole lot of alignment between Republicans and Democrats on. So I'm never too surprised when talks kind of break down like that. But I think, you know, they've pushed the schedule so far that it did seem like there was quite a lot of hope. And both sides talked about really operating in good faith. So we were hearing about good meetings. That was kind of the language around it. And so for it to end kind of abruptly, you know, it was 6 p.m. on a Wednesday or something like that, was a little bit surprising.
Interesting you bring that up, that they were kind of kind words. We're used to, like, everybody, like, pointing fingers and calling to their names. But Voss and Bourne and the governor both had quotes in their statements about good faith negotiations. Thanks for working together. So there was, like, there was some effort. But the battle lines were clear. The governor wanted education spending, K-12 and UW, along with child care. Republicans wanted tax cuts. Where that compromise is going to be, we'll never know, I guess. But that means the Finance Committee is back in the spotlight. They have to get working, and they started again on Thursday. So the big takeaway, I mean, no heavy lifting on Thursday's meeting, but probably the biggest thing was more than $732 million provide more revolving loans for clean water and safe drinking water. So this is a program where the feds have matching grants. State comes up with this money. You can then get the money for locals to do all kinds of things like wastewater treatment plants and those kinds of good projects. Talk about lead replacement. This will take care of the state's match for the next 4 years. That's a big deal. So it's some certainty for local governments when they apply for these funds. Now, interesting note, before the meeting on Thursday, Mark Bourne, the co-chair, said Republicans broke off negotiations because the governor, because he was demanding an increase in spending that far outpaced the tax cuts, one of my GOP leaders. He didn't give us specifics, but he says about a 3-to-1 ratio of spending to tax cuts. Now, a spokesperson for Governor Evers said the math is, quote, not remotely accurate. For what's worth, here's some video of Thursday's meeting with Mark Bourne ahead of the hearing as well.
Last night, Republicans walked away from a bipartisan budget negotiation with Governor Evers. And why? From the public statements, it appears that Republicans are unwilling to provide the funding that our kids need and deserve, whether it's early childhood education, child care, whether it's our public schools, or whether it's our public universities. These are the priorities that Wisconsinites have said again and again for years that they want in our budget.
As folks know, you know, we've had some good conversations in the last few weeks between the governor and the legislative leaders, and unfortunately those, you know, conversations have stopped. The spending really that the governor needs is just more than the state can afford, and it was getting to the point where it was about 3-1 compared to the tax cuts that we were looking at. So while those discussions have stopped, we're certainly happy to be moving forward with the state budget process.
All right, Anya, so they're back in action. The problem is they're way behind schedule, and so here's kind of some background for everybody at home about what we talk about, how behind schedule they are. The Finance Committee usually begins a meeting late April, early May. They meet often twice a week until they knock out a budget. It goes to the legislature, the governor's desk. Well, here from the slide, you can see the last four budgets, just to give you an idea. So for us this year, the Finance Committee has met three times total. They met twice before May 31st. Looking back, the last four budgets, look 2 years ago, 11 executive sessions between May 2nd and June 22nd, six by May 31st. 2023, nine overall sessions, four by May 31st. 2019, nine sessions, six by May 31st. Sense a trend about where we're at now. Last time we were really late in the budget, 2017-19, 12 executive sessions. They started May 1st, they finished September 5th. That's an interesting budget because you had full Republican control, but there's a giant divide about transportation funding. And so they reached an impasse in mid-June, took a two-month break, came back September, knocked it out. Go back even farther, 2007, Democrats controlled the Senate and the governor's office, Republicans the Assembly, took until October. Now, I'm not predicting an October budget, but what I want to point out for people at home is they are way behind schedule to get done on time. It's important to remember, though, there is no deadline for state government in terms of funding. Like, so the feds, they have a shutdown. We go as is, as long as it takes the budget done. But there's a symbolism about being done by June 30th. And so I guess my question is, how do you finish on time at this point with how far behind schedule you are?
Yeah, I mean, you and I both sat through 3 a.m. budget hearings, and so that might be kind of on our June agenda going forward. They could meet every Tuesday and Thursday for the next month and really kind of crank stuff out. And I guess we will see, and we'll see how, again, late in the night those go and how much of an agenda they kind of try to cram into each of those meetings.
I think it's really the heavy lifting hasn't been done yet. So the drivers of spending state government are K-12 education, UW, corrections, the Medicaid budget, medical assistance. None of them are on the agenda so far. The committee is going to meet on Tuesday next week. We saw they're taking the Supreme Court, Circuit Court, workforce development, insurance, Department of Revenue. Now, no offense to those agencies, they're not big heavy lifts to get those things done. So what I'm watching for is, when do I see a K-12 budget proposal? When do I see the UW budget come up? Remember, UW wants $855 million more in state aid. That's not going to happen, Republicans, right?
And that's the issue that the talks already just broke down on. We're definitely going to see some real, I think, tension there.
Yeah, the governor was probably their best hope of getting that anything close to $855 million. Now that he's not driving that or helping drive that train, I'm not sure where they're going to end up.
Yeah.
So speaking of money, we got an interesting letter this week, U.S. Department of Justice. So Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon sent a letter to the Elections Commission. I'm going to quote from this letter here real quick. Courts across the land, including our highest court, have repeatedly offended measures to ensure election integrity. We have made it our highest priority to identify jurisdictions that fail to follow our election laws and vigorously enforce the law by all means available. Now, why is this important? They are raising an issue with Wisconsin because there's a thing called the Help America Vote Act, approved in 2002 at the federal level. It requires a process to allow complaints to be heard at the state level. We have that if you have a complaint against somebody else. If you have a complaint against the Elections Commission, however, citing HAVA, you don't have that avenue with the commission itself because in 2022, the then conservative majority of the state Supreme Court ruled in the Dropbox lawsuit that the commission can't police itself. So since then, the agency said, hey, if you have a complaint about us, great, we can't touch it, go to the circuit courts. Dhillon is saying, because you don't have this avenue for people under HAVA, we're gonna withhold money, future money from you until you fix things. Now, a couple of interesting notes. One, I'm not sure the financial impact of this because Ann Jacobs, the Democratic chair of the commission, said there's not going to be any future funding coming out from the feds anyway, from the U.S. Election and Assistance Commission. And two, in the letter from Dhillon, there was a note about this website from the Assistance Commission about how much money we've got in Wisconsin and other states. So since early 2000s, $77 million to Wisconsin. By look, $55 million that was delivered by the end of 2010. There were no new grants since 2020. I don't know if it's going to be a financial hit, but it is more about, to me, the Trump administration, like shots across about elections commissions across the state. What did you take away from what you saw with this issue?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Sort of coincidentally, I had reached out to WEC over a week ago to ask about the federal funding question, and they said they were not counting on any federal funding coming down the line. They actually said that they were supposed to have a meeting earlier in the year about potential federal funding cuts and then canceled the meeting once they realized they would not be affected by that. And so I think you're right, it is in some ways an empty threat, but notably, that same office kind of filed a similar threat in North Carolina, and so I think it's not just about going after elections practices, but specifically swing states. And so that's kind of something to pay attention to.
Yeah, you know, there's a bigger theme here in the Trump administration of trying to say, you're going to follow what we want you to do. Interesting note, Ann Jacobs also put out on X this week that the letter the state received had an odd page of who was carbon copied in on the letter. They're all officials in California, the high school sports. The Trump administration earlier had warned California, if you keep allowing transgender athletes to compete in girls' sports, we're going to withhold funding from you. So a little sloppy work there. But again, the bigger thing here is that this is part of the Trump administration saying, hey, this is how we want things done. If you're not going to comply, we're going to come down hard on you about this issue. Now, politics this week never stops turning the Capitol. Here it was politics. We had a luncheon with State Chair Ben Wickler, former State Rep Amy Loudenbeck, who's filling Brian Schimming, who's ill. Hope he feels better now. But they're talking about the state of the parties and what's going on. Wickler predicted a burgeoning blue wave in Wisconsin, will come in full force next year, while Loudenbeck talked about the Republican Party being strong and about this coming study they're doing, this post-mortem about the spring election, they need to do better. So here's some video of the two of them at our luncheon this week talking about politics and the state of the parties in Wisconsin.
It's an opportunity for people from around the state to kind of share what their parties are working on, and I think some of the ideas that are important to them. It's an important part of being a grassroots membership organization, and I'd say the state of the party is strong.
What we see right now in Wisconsin, I think, is a burgeoning blue wave that's going to hit the state in 2026 with full force. And our state Democratic Party is closely working with our allies and partners, with unions and grassroots organizations, with the candidate campaigns, is in phenomenal shape to help accelerate that wave and win a trifecta in 2026.
So, Anya, there was kind of an interesting nugget for Ben at the luncheon about a book maybe coming. What's that all about?
Yeah, so that definitely caught my attention because when he announced he was stepping down, there was a lot of speculation. Oh, does this mean he's running for national office? And who knows what is in his future? But he said that one of the things he's working on right now is a book proposal where he says he thinks that there are lessons that, you know, national Democrats can take from what Wisconsin Democrats did. He said Wisconsin's a little bit of a, I forget the exact word, but like a preview of what Democrats are now facing at the national level. And so he's going to work on a book about that. And so that could potentially mean, you know, no campaigns for the next little while, unless maybe he's much better at time management than I am.
Well, I found politicians often write books to kind of like set up a run for public office, though. So keep an eye on that, I suppose.
Good point, yep.
A couple things to note looking for the two parties. So one, Democrats meet next weekend, Father's Day weekend on Saturday and Sunday, elect a new chair. Devin Remicker, who worked under Wickler at the party and been endorsed by Wickler. Joseph Pecky, operative of the Milwaukee area. William Garcia, the 3rd Congressional District Chair. They're all vying for that. We know they're going to meet in Wisconsin Dells and have an election. Kind of watching to see the direction the activists take with that party, if they want to build upon what Wickler has done or take a new tact. That's really been the themes I'm hearing this election, this race. Remicker is making the pitch of, I can take what Ben did and build upon it. Sopecki is saying, look, looking at November, really focusing on November, we really dropped the ball communicating to various constituencies, especially young men. We need to do everything differently. William Garcia is making a pitch about county parties and the strength with them. Often that's something I hear at county state conventions about people saying we should give more to the county parties, but not usually a winning message in state chair races. So I'm kind of focusing more on Sopecki and Remicker, and again, where the activists go with that election next weekend.
Yeah, I think Democrats have really been kind of working on those kind of existential questions since November, and obviously Wickler is not a stranger to that. He went through that same conversation when he was running for DNC chair, and the party was trying to figure out, you know, which kind of direction do we want to go in. And so we'll see our own kind of Wisconsin version of that, I think, in the Dells.
Yeah, and you bring up the national chair race. Wickler had all these big endorsements going into that race, Nancy Pelosi, Hakeem Jeffries, and didn't win. And the kind of lesson that I got from out of that was that these races are about your relationships. Mm-hmm. And so how well do you know the grassroots? How do you connect with them? I'm sure the 6 to 100,000 people who are going have been getting phone calls and emails from Devin and Joe and William and their supporters. But how are they connecting with him? Does Devin have a leg up? Because he was executive director of the party. He was political director. He's been part of that culture for a while. How's
that going to go? He has that Wickler endorsement. And, you know, Wickler is quite respected and kind of beloved by the party base. And so how many of those people will just kind of go by that endorsement?
And two, who can carry on the Wickler fundraising machine? Mm-hmm. So the party told me when he stepped down that he'd raised $206 million from the state and federal parties. Now, accounts, I should say, they've transferred money back and forth. So you can't just take the look at the year-end reports every year and get it, because it's kind of, there's a mix of funds there. But looking at that, you've got state accounts where you can raise unlimited donations. That's a big deal. And the federal ones, we have more restrictions, but that mix of funds is mind-blowing. I've never seen anybody raise that kind of money. And the question is, can either of these guys carry on that torch? Now, I'm sure Ben Williams' Rolodex behind with the party to help them do this. Is it the person making the pitch, or is it the pitch itself of we're Wisconsin, we always matter, we're always a purple state? It's been amazing in 25 years of covering Wisconsin politics. I've yet to see a blowout, well, a blowout election for president unless Barack Obama's on the ballot. That's the only exception to that rule. So watch that. And then with Republicans, you know, Lautenbeck talked about this postmortem, and I think we know what's plaguing Republicans. Unless Trump's on the ballot, Trump voters don't turn out. Is that their main problem?
I mean, at their convention a couple weeks ago, that's something that Ron Johnson said, is that we really have to kind of look towards the future without Trump on the ballot and figure out, especially in sort of off-year, off-cycle elections, how we turn our base out. And so that seems to be kind of the thing that they're trying to harness. Lautenbeck talked about the strength of their grassroots, but how do you really kind of harness that for things like a Supreme Court election in April, which is, you know, a little bit less of an exciting affair, perhaps.
And this is kind of like an inside-the-weeds piece of this report, but they got to figure out how to spend their money better. Remember, when you do broadcast advertising, candidates get better rates than groups do. And so Democrats have kind of mastered this playbook of big donations flow to the party. The party then makes big donations to the candidate. The candidate gets a cheaper rate, and their ad dollars go farther than the groups do. Republicans kind of caught up in the Supreme Court race, where we saw not as much disparity between what the Republican Party transferred to Brad Schimmel, what Democrats transferred to Susan Crawford. But so a lot of money flowed into these outside groups that don't get as good a rate. It's not spent as effectively. So how do Republicans convince their donors to be more bought into the party as a vehicle? Also, there's this kind of whole subtext of every one of those groups has a class of people who buy ads, who create ads, who make money off of their operations. So they have to protect their turf and their messaging. It'd be fascinating to watch what this report says, likely sometime in July, they've told me. And two, is there buy-in to the solutions that they propose? Because they got an election next spring they got to worry about. If they can't figure it out by then, they could be in some trouble with the Supreme Court. Speaking of trouble, some Milwaukee public schools in the news again because they're late again. There were deadlines last month to provide these financial reports. Department of Public Instruction announced that they're going to continue withholding aid from Milwaukee Public Schools, state's largest district. Deputy State Superintendent Tom McCarthy said the agency will continue withholding $16.6 million in prior year and begin withholding new aid for this year. We're expecting a formal notice sometime this week. I think you have some news about what actually MPS are facing at this point.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported like an hour ago that the state is actually now going to withhold $42 million in state aid until those reports come in. So that is not a small chunk of change.
Yeah, a little bit of a challenge there for the new superintendent.
A little bit.
All right, so everybody at home knows that my favorite topic in state government is redistricting. Interesting argument this week with called an anti-competitive gerrymandering. So, Anya, bear with me here for a little few minutes. But we have two lawsuits right now before the state Supreme Court asking the justices to redraw the congressional lines. Remember, the court took and acted upon a lawsuit about the legislative districts saying they're unconstitutional. In doing that, the court found the least change approach used a couple years earlier was no longer valid. So why is that important? All right, so Republicans drew lines in 2011 that were used for a decade. When it came to draw new lines, Governor Evers and Republican lawmakers could agree on new maps. Went to the Supreme Court. They said you have to least change approach to those previous maps to do whatever you want to do. In the end, the court selected the Evers map for congressional lines. Wow, there's all the background now for what's important here is there's been an argument raised that there's a partisan gerrymander with the congressional maps. The issue with that is there was testimony in a previous lawsuit that suggested it wasn't about partisanship, but protecting incumbents. Well, here is now an argument from the Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy and a group of voters saying that is also a problem. What they're saying is an anti-competitive gerrymander, which is not recognized yet in Wisconsin as a thing, but it makes the argument that they're every bit as bad as a partisan gerrymander or a racial gerrymander because they limit competitiveness. Now, here's some notes from their filing. The current maps are based, ones approved in 2011. Those maps, using over a decade, there were no incumbents lost and no seats changed hands with the parties. The median margin of victory was 25 percentage points. Only one race was tied by less than 10 points. Now, under the current maps, again, the foundation was those 2011 lines, the median margin of victory has been 30 points over 16 races. Only the third in Western Wisconsin has been decided by less than 10. So what they're saying is they want the court now to consider either or both a partisan gerrymander and an anti-competitive gerrymander. Fascinating discussion, fascinating issue. I don't know how the court's going to react to it, but it's a new line of attack on these maps. We have the two lawsuits, one from led by attorney Mark Elias, focusing on the partisan gerrymander issue. A second one raising an issue that the districts, when they were drawn, had too much of a deviation of population compared to being exactly equal. We're talking off by like two people, not one. Not to laugh about it, but that's how that's an issue. I'm not sure if it's a good one or not. And two, they split too many counties. That lawsuit, we had a filing from GOP lawmakers and the congressional members, Republicans in Congress, urged the court to reject a request, in their words, from GOP lawmakers to withdraw congressional districts anew in violation of the Federal Elections Clause, embrace a novel interpretation of a constitutional provision contrary to 125 years of this court's precedent, ignore the doctrine of latches, and transgress due process, all with the effect of enlarging this court's judicial power beyond recognition. So let's talk about these separately. First, interesting argument with the partisan gerrymander lawsuit. Deadlines are yesterday and today for people to weigh in on that one, so we'll see some new stuff maybe by Monday. The second one about this deviation issue and splitting counties. What I think is interesting here is the members of the Republican members of the congressional delegation want Janet Protasiewicz off that lawsuit. Why is that being raised? Remember in 2023, she ran, she called maps rigged. Speaking about the legislative maps, but so there's a process was rigged. There was an effort to get her off the case in the legislative one back in 2023. She rejected it. I know a lot of talking right here. I'm sorry.
No, I'm learning so much, JR.
2024, after the maps were thrown up by the legislature, there was a lawsuit filed, just like the party zero one, saying you guys should redraw the lines because least change doesn't apply anymore. The court said no, 6-0. Protasiewicz didn't participate in that case because she said, I'm recusing because I wasn't involved in the first decision, not because you guys asked me to step off. So now we might find out, how does Janet Protasiewicz feel about being forced to recuse from a lawsuit about redistricting? Fascinating to watch it play out. Big things here are the Elections Commission has said, we don't care what you do. If you take the case, fine. You don't take it, fine. All we care about is we want maps in place so you don't impact the 2026 calendar. We need that by March. So fascinating to watch. Do we have, one, the court take the case, and two, have a new map by March of 2026? Because if you don't, it makes putting on the election in November very difficult. Oh, by the way, if the Elections Commission, or sorry, if the Supreme Court does take this case, the U.S. Supreme Court might get interested in what they're doing and come in and say, hey, there's a problem here. So anyway,
a dull day in Wisconsin politics.
Our weekly talk about redistricting. So what I'm going to get to this week, there's a story last week, Anya, yeah, I'm sure you saw it as well. Kristi Noem, the DHS secretary, said, hey, there is a problem here. We have a man in Wisconsin who's not here legally, who wrote a threatening letter to President Trump, and we want to know this is a danger. We should focus on our efforts to get people out of this country. Turns out, Anya, that guy maybe didn't write those letters. So development here. Turns out a guy who had actually battered the other guy who's accused, I'm not going to say his credit, Ramon Morales Reyes, he is the victim of a battery case, alleged victim of a battery case. Demetric Scott, according to prosecutors, wrote these letters trying to frame him to get him deported, and then for prevent Ramon from testifying against him in a trial later this summer. So what we have now is accused this guy had jailhouse interviews saying, or conversations saying, I'm going to do this. DA's office is saying this guy's going to have four new felony charges against him. And the question becomes whether Ramon stays to testify or not.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This is what advocacy groups have been saying, and also even some law enforcement, which is that some of the targeting of immigrants under this new administration could kind of lead to these types of frame jobs, or really kind of getting to use one community as a bit of a target for your own kind of personal issues. And so law enforcement has talked about how that can really kind of muddy their jobs as well. So that'll be interesting to see if this becomes kind of a trend right now.
Great. Well, that's Rewind for June 6th. I am J.R. Ross.
I'm Ani Van Wagtendonk.
Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.